bisexuality.
Bisexual.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexual.
Triple bypass.
Bisexual.
Bisexual.
Bisexuality.
I'm bisexual.
Bisexuality.
The best of both worlds.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass.
Triple bypass on Joy 94.9.
Triple Bypass acknowledges that we broadcast from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging, and to any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people who are listening today. We acknowledge that this land was never ceded, no treaty was ever signed, and that it always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
We are back with another hour of Bypass Power. It's Triple Bypass. Tonight we welcome a very special guest to the show to chat about her experiences raising a multi-gender attracted teen. That's right, it's my beautiful sister Ali and the mother of my gorgeous nibbling Caitlin. We will also be joined by Micah Scott, CEO of Minus 18, to talk about the Queer Art Here report, which has just been released, following a consultation project and education road trip spanning 131 days with over 1,000 participants in regional and rural areas around Australia. This and many more of the latest news, conversations, updates and music from some incredible queer artists, as well as plenty of puns as we put the B in October, here on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. Now, here's Gemini, the brand new track from queer heartthrob Brendan McLean. This is Triple Bypass, your weekly Bi-Plus radio takeover. I'm Alex.
I'm Amelia.
And as always, we are here to bring you your weekly dose of Bi-Plus community feels. Indeed, fellow isolators and folks tuning in from around the country and indeed the whole wide world, we continue to record remotely from the comfort of our homes and pajamas, but that does not mean you still can't get in touch. We would love to hear from you, in fact. Find us on social media, on Facebook, Triple Bypass, Instagram, at Triple Bypass Joy, or email Amelia, Ruby, or I at any time at triplebypass@joy.org.au. You can find all of our shows as podcasts via joy.com.au/triplebypass or wherever you find your delicious, juicy podcasts. But now it's time for the Bi-Plus community news.
have you made that beautiful recording you promised me, Alex?
I still have not made it. I'm sorry.
That's all right. You can go a cappella.
Okay. How was it?
That's beautiful. I love it.
One day I will have a choir and an orchestra playing that for you, Amelia. It will be a beautiful
Oh, moment. I look forward to that day. But look, you know, it is just as beautiful coming from your mouth, my love.
That's what they said. All right. Friday the 16th of October is Give Out Day, a chance to support LGBTIQA plus organisations and rainbow projects. Joy is raising important funds to upskill LGBTIQA plus people in regional and rural and remote areas, enabling them to share their stories through Joy platforms. This initiative will help decrease social isolation, foster social connection, and ensure that diverse voices and experiences of LGBTIQA plus people across Australia are represented, heard, and seen. Help us make this exciting new project a reality. You can do that by heading to our website, joy.org.au, or to giveout.org.au/joy to donate and support this really important project.
I'm so glad Joy are working with Give Out Day. I worked with them last year as one of the board members at Switchboard, and we raised such an amazing amount of money to do some, you know, incredible work that we need to do, especially as LGBTIQA plus charities. You know, we don't get given a whole heap of funding. So I'm so glad to see that Joy is working with Give Out Day. And I really encourage people to give generously to this project, because we really want to make sure that we can work with regional and rural communities, especially now that we have the accessibility to do so through Zoom and, you know, the more online we are in this pandemic. So it would be great if you could all participate.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting. Later on, we'll be talking to Micah Scott from Minus 18 about their recent report, Queer Out Here, which has delved into the needs and, I guess, the wants of rural communities and queer young people all across Australia.
Yeah, cool.
So now more than ever, this is a really important time for us to be thinking about making donations towards research and work like this. And I'm excited that Joy is putting their time and money behind this. Absolutely.
Hooray! We've got Micah on the show later, don't we?
We do indeed. Very excited to talk to him about the new report.
Yeah, lucky ducks, lucky us. I'm excited. It's going to be great. Love a bit of literature of a Tuesday evening. Now, for our bisexual news this week, you know, in shocking news, no one will be shocked. Our listeners will be like, yeah, righto, Amelia. another story about a dating show.
Listen, last time I was hosting this wonderful show we call Triple Bypass, we talked about a dating show. I feel like now my legacy will to be talk about a dating show every time, every time.
Look, and that's probably where we get a lot of our news, my friend. So that's, you know,
they're giving us such juicy content.
Yes, exactly. So Love Island in the UK, there was a contestant and model, Megan Barton Hansen, and she says that she has regrets for not coming out as bi plus in her season of Love Island back in 2018. And she said that she was concerned that coming out may have added to the perception that she was, and this is a literal quote, really sexual on the program.
I wonder what that means.
It's like, I don't know either. I presume it's feeding into the stereotype that bi plus people are hypersexual as like a general rule of thumb. And like, look, some of us are. That is correct. But also
but
some...
that's not necessarily a trait of
bi plus people. No, it's just exactly you and I, Amelia. Right. Yeah, okay, sure. Why do people let us make radio together? I don't understand. But so she was like, look, I didn't do it at this time because I didn't come out at this time because it would feed into people's perception of me on the show. And that's really, really shitful, I think. So she went on to say, it took me so long to come out because I worked in the sex industry and because I didn't want the coming out process to be for the male gaze or for people to think, oh, she's doing it for attention or to seem more appealing to men, because that, she says, is the furthest thing from the truth. So, you know, there's that. And I feel like that experience, not necessarily coming out in such a public kind of way or having your character linked to your sexuality isn't necessarily relatable for just our everyday bisexuals. But I feel like that experience of not wanting to come out because you don't want to be seen to be doing it for attention or to be hypersexualized or to be more appealing to cis men, let's say, is an experience that quite a few femme folks can relate to. At least I can really hard. Like that, oh, you know, you're just doing it to get more attention from guys. No, not really.
What people say about cis men who come out as bisexual, they're gay, they're just like waiting to get there. It's a similar kind of treatment in a different way, I guess. Yeah.
For sure. So I could appreciate, you know, why she didn't come out when she was on the show. But at the same time, I'm just really hopeful that that kind of narrative around bisexuality changes. And hopefully for our young people who... you know, are coming out younger and younger. You know, that's not, you know, a rule, but from what I've heard, at least, there are folks who are realizing their sexuality much younger than perhaps our generation or the generations before us did, and also stepping into that sexuality and that identity from a younger age, which is gorgeous.
Absolutely. Well, later in the show, we'll be joined by my wonderful sister, Ali, who's talking about my nibbling, Caitlin, who came out as pansexual at age 12, actually just before the plebiscite occurred here in Australia. I think that time was a real eye-opening time for a lot of young people. And luckily for my nibbling, they are in a family that is super supportive and they felt very comfortable in coming out at that time, which is super exciting to think that is an experience of a very young person in this day and age, because it definitely wasn't mine.
That is so amazing. I can't wait to hear more from them.
Absolutely. Well, soon we'll be joined by Micah Scott, CEO of Minus 18, to discuss their recently released Queer Out Here report that we mentioned earlier. But in the meantime, here's a song that Micah has chosen for us, the brand new one from Kylie Minogue. It's Magic, coming to you from Joy 94.9's Flag Bearers for Bisexual Plus Pride. It's Triple Bypass. That was Magic by Kylie Minogue, and we are back with your weekly dose of the Bisexual Plus agenda. It's Triple Bypass. I'm Alex.
I'm Amelia.
And tonight we are lucky enough to welcome Micah Scott, CEO of Minus 18. Minus 18 are the champions for queer youth here in Melbourne and indeed around the country, leading change, building social inclusion, and advocating for an Australia where all young people are safe, empowered, and surrounded by people that support them. For over 10 years, Micah has led the charge for LGBTIQ youth empowerment as Founding's Chief Executive Officer at the Minus 18 Foundation. A leading LGBTIQ inclusion and creative specialist, He has been involved in the development of groundbreaking LGBTIQ plus youth initiatives Australia-wide. For these achievements, Micah was named finalist for the Young Australian of the Year and named Globe's LGBTIQ Person of the Year in 2017. Welcome, Micah.
Hello. Oh, I love that introduction. I should get you to follow me around and go into a room before I arrive and say it all. It would be a real ego boost for me.
Was that the page? Was that the role of the page back in the day? Is that what they did? They just like announced people?
Oh, yeah. A squire maybe? Yeah, they just come on in and
more than happy to.
I love that.
I'll send you a list of prices that you could look at.
Definitely. Yeah, send me your fees.
Well, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you here. Thanks for being here. 2020 has been a weird year for us all, but I would love to know what 2020 has looked like for the Minus 18 crew.
Yeah, weird is certainly one word to describe it. Look, I think like many, the year of social isolation and COVID has brought about real ups and downs. And from LGBTQIA plus youth perspective around Australia, we're seeing, like many, just a huge amount of social isolation, people feeling disconnected. And of course, the added layer as well of being stuck at home for a lot of young people in unsupportive families or family homes where they may not feel comfortable being themselves. And, you know, the need to escape those circumstances and go out and be with friends and find community as a mechanism of survival and resilience isn't there. And so when isolation first hit, we knew that at Minus 18, we had to do something and we really had to reach out to young people and hear from them what their experiences were. So we held a youth consultation and spoke to nearly 250 young people from around the country and said,
great.
Hey, like, yeah, like what's going on, how are you feeling, and what do you want to see from us? Like, what do you need? And overwhelmingly, what we heard was that young people wanted spaces to connect and hang out and chill out and be able to find queer community from the comfort of their bedroom, you know, close the door, open your laptop, put in your headphones and escape mom and dad. And so that's really what the year has looked like for us, you know, like everyone else, pivoting to digital environments. But for young people and for Minus 18, that's been like celebratory events and creating community in spaces where we haven't always been successful or there's been barriers in attending online community.
I think there are definitely some barriers around, I guess, having events run for people who are under 18 online, because there's been, you know, early days of Zoom being a thing everyone was using. People jumping into Zoom calls left, right and center was something that we were seeing all around the world. And making safe spaces for young people online has been a little difficult, I think, for some organizations.
I wondered about that.
I'll tell you what, though, the same can be said for underage events in general.
Indeed.
You know, underage events cop a lot of flack for being unsafe, for teenagers being rowdy. But our underage events for queer young people, they're so thankful and have so much gratitude for a space that is inclusive of them and safe for them to attend. And they fulfill their responsibility to contribute to that space as well. And that's totally the same for online environments. You know, we can have a Zoom call with nearly 500 young people in the Zoom call all together. Everybody is looking out for each other. Everybody is caring and considerate. The chat is wild, absolutely wild, but it is safe and it is supportive. And that's really beautiful to see.
Absolutely. Well, you said you consulted with quite a few young people regarding your 2020 programming. Now, on Tuesday last week, I was really excited to receive in my inbox the latest report from Minus 18, which is your Queer Out Here report, in which you did a lot of consulting to gather information from young queer people all around the country. Can you tell us a little bit about that report and what led to that coming about?
Yeah. So Queer Out Here report, we consulted with over 1,000 students and teachers from all over Australia, particularly from regional and rural areas. 55 regional areas are represented in the report. And it sort of all started around 2018. We worked with the Victorian government to host a Queer Ideas Festival, where we brought young leaders in from around the state and asked them, like, what do they want to see for a more queer inclusive future? And overwhelmingly, what we were hearing from young people from regional areas is the lack of services and the lack of support that they had, particularly in their school. And from young people who weren't in regional areas, a real empathy and a real desire to do more for their peers who were in those areas. And so, you know, the biggest barrier for an organisation like Minus 18, you know, we're an Australia-wide organisation supporting tens of thousands of queer young people every single year, and we only have 9 staff for the whole country.
And oh, so, my goodness.
I know. Going out into regional rural areas, it just is not affordable for our team. And it's also just so challenging for us. And so we work really closely with regional groups to sort of upskill them and bring them into cities for our events so that they can all be there together. But we really recognize the need to do more in that space and try to figure out sort of like how to do it. And through that process, aside from the consultations that we had with young people, we realized not a lot of conversation had been had, particularly with teachers and other students in those areas around what they wanted. And there's this big myth and there's this big perception that regional areas aren't inclusive and people in regional areas don't want to hear about LGBTQIA plus topics. And from our consultation and going around into these areas, a lot of it traveling into those spaces, delivering training, having conversations, and then COVID hit, so a lot of them happening online. What we saw overwhelmingly was not quite that case. There was a lot of a lack of education for sure, and a lack of resources and accessibility of information, but there was a really strong desire from straight and cisgender students and teachers as well to do more, but what we heard was that they just didn't know how.
They didn't know.
Exactly.
And the fact that they're willing and open and understanding that something needs to happen is so beautiful and wonderful to hear.
Exactly. And so what it took was an organisation like Minus 18, you know, investing the energy to go out into those communities, knocking on those doors, sort of building trust, and then sort of having those conversations. And after every single consultation, we also delivered LGBTQIA plus inclusion training. So training for teachers and workshops for students. And we found that 98% of participants felt more prepared to support LGBTQIA plus inclusion after that session as well.
Yeah, cool. That doesn't surprise me as a LGBTIQA plus inclusion trainer. for the most part, people just aren't necessarily malicious or not well-meaning. It's just they don't know where to begin, especially with inclusive language and especially with identity terms for our LGBTIQA plus youth, because language, if we have to invent our own, you know, the language that currently exists doesn't necessarily fit some of our identities, and so it's constantly evolving. So it doesn't surprise me that that kind of lack of confidence can contribute to lack of LGBTIQA plus young people feeling included, because people just don't want to say the wrong thing and offend people. So it's amazing that your staff are able to go out and deliver that training for teachers as well as students, because for the most part, I imagine they want to do the right thing by their LGBTIQA plus siblings and students. It's just where to start can be a really tricky question that it can be quite hard to figure out on your own, I guess. So it's great you guys have been able to go out and have some of those conversations with them.
Exactly. Thank you. That's very kind.
That's okay, Mike. I also wondered what some of the initiatives you guys were going to put into motion following these results. Like, were you surprised by some of the findings that the report returned? Were there, I guess, plans on what to do next?
That's a really good question. And I suppose we really see this as step one. And part of the main reason for this consultation, as I mentioned, is that there hadn't been a lot of published conversations that we could see. Information is so important in order to apply for funding, to show the need. And that's all really critical in this process, because it is expensive to do this work, travel costs, staff time, all of that. And what our main takeaway is that there is that need, but there is more work to be done.
So
we saw that workshops and training work, and they're a really amazing tool that we can use to upskill people. And to have that conversation and build empathy and bring them along on that journey. From training, some of the other ideas that were explored were things like awareness and visibility material, specific social and support spaces for queer young people, and in particular as well, a really firm recognition that, you know, there are intersectional and diverse identities within the communities and within regional and rural areas that sometimes get lost because talking about queer identity is hard enough without talking about queer identity and racism all in one conversation. And so, you know, that was a really big piece that we were hearing too, is that we're very privileged in metro areas where those conversations, I think it's fair to say, they happen a little bit more often and a little bit more vocally. And, you know, there's a need, a desire to learn more and to have more of those conversations from the people that we spoke to.
That's incredible. And it's good to hear that that level of intersectionality is actually being discussed now. I think for a long time, intersectionality was something that people, as you say, in the city were still grappling with. But for now, us to be talking, you know, across so many different levels of inclusiveness is exciting. And it's exciting to hear that there are some things on the way for those rural communities you visited. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Micah. It was such a pleasure to get to chat to you about this report. I am so excited, having read it, to see what comes in the next 12 months. Hopefully a slightly more contact-based level of things moving forward as we grapple with this COVID thing. But thank you on behalf of us for the amazing work that you continue to do with Minus 18 to bring a brighter future for all our queer youngsters all across the country, not just in the major cities.
Thank you for having me. And I will just say that you can download the report for free, so anyone can access it, use it in your own grant writing. You know, if you're in a school, you want to learn more, or you're just curious, you can download it at minus18.org.au.
That is absolutely fabulous. So you can also find more about Minus 18. I love that you can download some free reports. That's the best thing in my data nerd mind. But you can find more about Minus 18 on Facebook at Minus 18 Youth, on Instagram at Minus 18 Youth, or head to their website, as Micah just mentioned, minus18.org.au, to find out more about training that they offer for folks in schools, but also some absolutely fabulous resources about LGBTIQA plus young people, pronouns, all of those things. I use your videos in my training because they are spectacular. So thank you so much, Micah.
As well as an opportunity for you to be able to donate. Minus 18 always needs more money to do the amazing work that they do. So please do jump on. And if you can donate, do donate. But don't go anywhere right now, as coming up next, we are joined by my incredible sister, Ali, to talk about her experiences as a parent with a multi-gender attracted teen, my gorgeous nibbling Caitlin. In the meantime, here's a song chosen by Caitlin. It's We Fell in Love in October by Girl in Red, here on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. You're here on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9, your weekly hour of bisexual plus power, and that was We Fell in Love in October by Girl in Red, chosen by my gorgeous little nibbling Caitlin. My name is Alex, and in a hilarious turn of events, Amelia has lost power, so you've got me for the rest of the episode. We are here every week bringing you the bisexual radio you love through global pandemics and local blackouts. Every episode of Triple Bypass, as well as the Bi Polycast and interviews with bicons including Myra Wilson and Beck Sandridge, are available in podcast form via joy.org.au or wherever you consume your tastiest podcasts. I am so excited to welcome our next guest. As well as having the difficult task of being my sister, Ali is a dedicated mother to Caitlin, wife to Eli, and student currently studying law. Caitlin is 14 years old, non-binary, and first became open about attraction to girls at age 11, right before the federal government announced the plebiscite on marriage equality, or as my sister Ali likes to call it, a nationwide survey to measure the voting public's view on the validity of other people's love. I really couldn't have said it better myself. Hello, Ali.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Thank you for being here. I was just reminiscing and thinking, did 10-year-old Alex ever think that in 20 years' time he'd be sitting here during a global pandemic in his bedroom in track pants interviewing his sister about her daughter?
I mean, I couldn't have predicted it, although you've got some weird psychic abilities, so perhaps you could have predicted it.
Maybe it was in there somewhere. I mean, whatever. I'm so excited to be doing this. So thank you for joining me. And I'm sorry Amelia couldn't be here to talk to you as well. I know she would have loved to.
Yeah, she could have joined the pajama party, but we'll just have to do it you and me, old school style.
Absolutely. I have it on good authority that Amelia right now is doing a Macca's run for her and her partner. So, Well, we're here to chat a bit about Caitlin, but first I'd love to have a chat with you about your experiences in the queer community and your own journey, I guess, through the queer community as a young person, but now as an adult. So talk to me a little bit about your history.
Okay, so I grew up, I was a teen in the 90s, and that was kind of a bit of a, it feels like looking back, a bit of a transitory phase in terms of how acceptable it was to be queer when you're a teenager. So I had a couple of queer friends in high school who bore the brunt of some pretty severe homophobia, and it just, my experience of observing that was that it just wasn't okay, and I'm a mouthy sort of a person, so I would always insert myself into these situations and speak out against that sort of hatred, I guess. So I guess from a young age I was very passionate about the equality of, you know, we're just humans, we're just, if you're loving each other then that's the best thing we can be doing. So yeah, that was my experience as a very young person, and then obviously throughout adulthood, I had a little brother who I'm now on the radio with, who came out and probably much to our parents' shock, but not really much to my shock, to be honest.
Come off it. Was it because of that time you went to the Beastie Boys concert and I was obsessed with the makeup you did with the Diamantes and everything?
Yeah, and like raiding mum's high heels and jewellery and wearing wigs and just generally being the most fabulous little five-year-old that you could possibly have been at the time.
I do what I can.
yeah. So I, yeah. And obviously I'm just the sort of person who doesn't see attraction or gender identity or anything like that as a basis on which to judge a person. So yeah, throughout my life, I've been a fairly passionate campaigner of marriage equality and equality in many other areas, which we're still making progress on. And, yeah, I have some people very close to me who don't fit the cis-hetero kind of box, and so I'm, you know, very protective of those people.
Absolutely. And now as a parent, I mean, you'd be even more predictive, I guess, especially having one that, you know, came out to you at such a young age. And I can't imagine the feeling that that was as a parent to know that your child had trusted you with probably their most, you know, their biggest bit of information about themselves that they weren't ready to talk to anyone about. What was it like as a parent knowing that your child had chosen you to kind of talk about these things with?
I was incredibly proud. I kind of had a moment of, oh my gosh, I haven't fucked up this one's childhood. Like, that's amazing. This is my only child and I'm managing to get it right because she trusts me with this information. And then the follow-up emotion was concern because despite how far we've come, there are still people out there who wish harm upon other people because of who they love. And I didn't want my precious little child to bear the brunt of that sort of misguided hatred. So yeah, it was not, it was a really mixed moment. So incredibly proud, also incredibly scared. And then as that kind of information settled in my brain and kind of thought through the implications of what that meant, I guess I thought, well, my job from here on is to prepare this little precious gem of a human to live in a world where some people might not be tolerant of who they are, and also, you know, create a world where more people become tolerant and loving of each other.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. Like, it's like we're, you know, from the same family or something.
Well, I mean, I've trained you from a very young age to agree with most things that I say. So it's fantastic that you're not challenging me on the radio.
That is fabulous. Well, speaking about family, the plebiscite was an interesting time for a lot of families. I know for our family, it was a time where We discussed it a lot, and I've discussed this before on the show that I had a dad who was pretty unsure about the whole thing for a little while, but then became a flag bearer for marriage equality by the end of the campaign, and it was so exciting to see his transformation. What was it like for you, having just had a child come out to you just before the plebiscite came into motion, and how did that impact, I guess, the decisions you made for yourself, for Caitlin, and for your family?
I guess like any parent, my first instinct is to protect. So I wanted to wrap Caitlin up in a blanket and hide her away for 6 months until it was all over, because I knew that despite whatever efforts I made, there were going to be times when they're exposed to views that I would rather they not be, and not really have the maturity or capacity to understand why.
Absolutely.
And and then my next thing was, well, I've campaigned for marriage equality for a lot of my life. I have involved Caitlin in that in the past, and we now have even more reason to get ourselves involved in that. So, you know, how do I involve an 11-year-old in these fairly adult discussions and take them along to rallies and things like that where there might be people who are campaigning against what we're trying to achieve? And like most things in life, in the end, I went, fuck it, let's just jump in the deep end. And so we got along to all the rallies and, you know, emailed and wrote letters to all the people that we needed to do. And yeah, I'm really, really glad I made that decision, because it made it really clear to Caitlin and, you know, the fact that we had our family behind us in those decisions as well. Yeah, it just made, I hope that it made Caitlin feel like she was surrounded by love.
Well, my beloved sister Ali has chosen our next song, and it's very fitting and also one of my favourites. Impeccable taste, if I do say so myself.
Oh, I had such a crush on George Michael when I was a kid. What a waste, but ah well.
Well, this is in fact Somebody to Love, but performed by George Michael with Queen at the Freddie Mercury tribute concert in 1992. You're on Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9, and we'll be back in a jiffy. That was Somebody to Love, performed by George Michael with Queen. And you are back on Triple Bypass, the show that puts the B in LGBTQIA+, along with a P for pansexual, a Q for queer and questioning, and how about an E for everybody else, because we are not gatekeeping queers here. And now we're back with my rad sister from Radelaide, Ali, talking about her experience as a parent with a multigender attracted teen. Welcome back, Ali.
Thanks.
So we're talking a little bit before the break about the plebiscite, and now I want to talk a little bit more about Caitlin's experience. I would love to know, as someone who was only 11 when they were discussing this with you, how did Caitlin embrace their feelings around multi-gender attraction?
So the first inkling that I had that Caitlin wasn't heterosexual was that she said to me, I think I might be attracted to girls and I'm scared my friends won't like me anymore. And that was kind of heartbreaking to hear. And I don't know, still don't know what the right response is to that, because I can't say, oh, no, of course it'll be fine, because maybe it's not fine. And I can't say, oh, well, they definitely won't want to be friends with you anymore, because that's not true either. So I guess it was just a process of, okay, well, we'll talk about how some people might react to that. And all I could do was help Caitlin build, you know, a solid foundation of support, so that if things didn't go well, they had somewhere to turn to. And if things did go well, well, then fantastic. That's what we'd been planning for. And I guess how Caitlin came to terms with it was just very slowly coming out to very close friends until word gets around schools, and then it kind of became a thing that everybody knew, and it was just fine. And that was just who Caitlin was. So, we were really lucky that we had a very supportive school, and, you know, ultimately most of Caitlin's friends were fine.
I can remember the first time I started talking about being bisexual, my friend Nikki at our school music camp told me now is a good time. And I specifically remember a moment when I ran out into a field at night yelling, I'm bi, at the top of my lungs. I don't know whether anyone ever heard that or whether it made any difference. It definitely made me feel like I'd released some demons into the air. But
That does not surprise me at all that you did that.
I'm glad that I'm just everything you're saying. I'm just so glad that they had you to come to, that Caitlin had you to come to and talk about, and that you'd created an environment whereby Caitlin felt comfortable talking about these things with a parent. It's so exciting and humbling to hear that that's happening so much more.
Yeah, look, I think probably you had a bit to do with it. So obviously it wasn't like Caitlin was kind of jumping in the deep end of, you know, feeling out my attitude towards people who are queer. Caitlin already knew that that was fine with me, and so it was just a matter of, you know, them saying to me rather than kind of going, oh, maybe mum's really homophobic or something like that. There was just none of that. So the fact that Caitlin knew her uncle was out and that was fine with everybody, it kind of probably created, you probably blazed a trail there, which is an awesome thing to do for your nibbling.
Well, I mean, and I think that's something we talk about often on this show, is that when people either in the public eye or people you know are openly talking about their sexuality, it definitely makes you feel more comfortable talking about it yourself. And I mean, even I remember the last time, maybe it wasn't the last time I saw Caitlin, we had dinner down near the beach in Adelaide, and yep, we were talking about them being pansexual. And I was like, oh, I don't really use that word. I kind of don't talk about a sexuality very often. And if I go back to one, it's usually bi. And in most of my circles, people just say I'm gay. And I'm like, that kind of encompasses how I feel a lot of the time. But it was actually a conversation with Caitlin that led me to say, to think and to consider that pan is a word I wanted to use more for myself, because I had experiences with a multitude of different genders. And I realized that that wonderful word pansexual really embodied everything that I felt. And it was honestly a conversation with Caitlin that made me feel excited about using that term, which is really cool. I think
awesome
that we kind of gave back to each other. Have you found that Caitlin's association with multi-gender attraction has changed or flowed? Have they spoken to you about their feelings in terms of the different genders they're attracted to?
Look, like the gender identity, I am finding that it fluctuates over time. So there's never a time when I could go, oh, Caitlin's definitely gay or definitely bi or definitely pan or, you know, definitely not straight. I really think pansexual is a good word to describe it, because it does seem, I mean, you remember what being 14 years old is like you're crushing on one person one week, a different person the next week.
I literally had an eraser with everyone's name on it that I
So, gosh, that doesn't surprise me either. It really is it's just it fluctuates. So I don't really want to kind of box Caitlin into one category or another. Like, I just think, well, if Caitlin grows up and meets somebody who loves them for who they are and they love their partner, well, or partners, if that's the case, then I'm happy. That's all you want for your kids, is just happiness.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned earlier about having a supportive school and also supportive friends. Earlier on the show, we chatted to Micah Scott, who works for Minus 18, who do a lot of work in going into schools and educating teachers, but also students. They've just had a massive survey and report and extensive education workshops all around the country. So it'd be great to hear from you what the school experience has been like, and also the friendships have been like since Caitlin's been more open talking about both being non-binary and also about being pansexual.
So the school that Caitlin was at when they came out was a public primary school, and they were fantastic. Like, I met with the principal, and I had a pretty good relationship with the principal already, which probably helped. And the principal was like, right, well, the first thing we need to do is make sure that we get some education for all the students in the school that, you know, using words like gay as an insult is not cool and all that sort of business. Unfortunately, at the time that this happened, the Safe Schools program had been defunded here in South Australia. I don't know if that's the case across the whole country. But luckily for me, I knew the woman who was a big part of running that program here in Adelaide, and she came and did some education with the teachers at the school, and then they were able to pass on some of that information to their students. So the school was fantastic. The friends, it was a very, very culturally diverse school. So there were some students who came from quite religious families, and some of Caitlin's close friend group who came from very religious families, and it was an uncomfortable thing for them at first. But over time, I think it just kind of faded into the background. It was just like, oh, this is who Caitlin is. Like, it's irrelevant to our friendship. You know, it was fine. The high school that Caitlin's in now is fantastic as well. Like, they actually, it is a Catholic school, but they are possibly the most progressive Catholic school that I've ever heard of in the country. Anyway, they have gender-neutral toilets. Yeah, they run a really good education program about relationships, and it's not restricted to, you know, heterosexual relationships or even relationships only in the context of marriage. So I've been really impressed with that, and I just feel like we're really lucky. Caitlin's current friendship circle, there's a few gender diverse kids in that group, and people with differing attractions. So, yeah, I think Caitlin's just been able to jump in the deep end and be exactly who they are. So that's awesome.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, my last question to you before we wrap up tonight, Ali, is if you were to give any advice to other parents who've got children that are starting to come to terms with and discussing their gender nonconformity or multigender attraction, what would that advice be?
Don't panic. It's going to be okay. Probably, like most parents, your first instinct is protectiveness. And then thinking, well, how's this little child going to make their way in the world when the world could be a bit of a scary place for LGBTQI people? But, yeah, I mean, your child is exactly who they were the day before they told you. So nothing's changed. It's just that you now have a closer relationship with your child, and that's a beautiful thing. So if that's happened to you, feel proud that you've done a really awesome job of raising an awesome human that feels confident to talk to you about that stuff. Big thumbs up.
I couldn't agree more. I have loved watching you become a parent, and I constantly am in awe of the way you go about your life, both as an advocate for the queer community, but also as an advocate for your child. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. It's been such a pleasure to talk about this with you, and also to share your story and Caitlin's story with so many people who are listening.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me on. It's really good to have a chat. We don't actually get to catch up that much when we're not recording radio shows.
Thanks, Ali. Love you.
Love you too.
Well, that is a wrap on another episode of Triple Bypass, but we'll be back again next Tuesday to bring you more Bi-Plus goodness. We thank you for joining us from wherever you are listening. And remember, you can find every episode of Triple Bypass as a podcast wherever you choose to consume your podcasts. A big thank you to our team behind the scenes that ensure that every episode of Triple Bypass comes together and is then available as a podcast. To Pete and Lou, we love you! If you know a friend who'd enjoy the show, let them know, because that's what friends are for and our community is all about. You can find us waving the bisexual flag on social media, Facebook, Triple Bypass, Instagram, Triple Bypass Joy, or email us at any time at triplebypass@joy.org.au. I'm Alex, and this has been another episode of Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. We'll be back next week to deliver you more juicy Bi-Plus content in this, your very own Bi-Plus playground. Be well, and remember, don't go changing to try and please me. You never let me down before. See you soon, Bi-Plus babes!